everybody, and welcome to episode 60 of the Electricell podcast. Now going weekly until I get fed up of doing it weekly. Or at the moment, we experienced, I think it was a 14% rise in week on week rise in listenerships.
Yeah,
since we started that, so that's good. So if we, I think. If we go I'm not very good at maths, but I think if we get four, if we like 14% every week, the entire population of Britain should be listening by
March?
July, March, yes,
yeah.
March 2025. Let's not be greedy, but
not last March.
No,
yeah, absolutely. No. I think so. If it keeps rising like that exponentially.
Yeah. Exponentially,
so keep it
yeah.
up, listeners. It's good to have any, I guess, hello, new listeners.
Yeah, if you're out there. Friends. Yeah.
New friends, new comrades. Thanks for joining Steamship Alexi.
Yeah.
As we
A lot of people say, I've been listening. I've been listening to your podcast, they say.
Oh, is that what people say? Yeah. I've heard people say that. Yeah. Happens in the most random places as well.
Yeah.
Random festivals for me. I've had it a couple times now at festivals.
No, that's good.
Someone tapped me on the shoulder. Hey, and they're always a bit secretive about it.
Yeah.
Hey, I love your podcast, by the way, just so you know. And I go, oh, really? And I turn around, they're gone. they don't want to like... make a show.
Well, you know, it's getting that way, isn't it? I think soon they will. Yvette Cooper will make listening to this podcast illegal. Did you see the bloody the farmers' demonstration? I think it was 2 days ago now, wasn't it? Where they blocked off traffic, and you know, and there's only 12,000 of them, but yet it got number one. You know, I mean, there's a million of us march for Palestine. It doesn't get diddly squat on the press, but there's 12,000 people in barbed jackets and rugby sheds got you know, headline news and all the media, and of course none of them will also be jailed for up to 5 years, as Yvette Cooper is doing with Just Stop Oil or Palestine Action. Yeah, so I think you see a hypocrisy there.
What were they protesting? The only thing I saw of it was one of them was being really racist towards Ash Sarkar.
Really?
Sarkar,
I didn't see that.
The lady from that.
It's
news.
I think it's basically, if you've got a farm worth over 3 million, you'll have to pay inheritance tax when you pass it on. I mean, I think wealthy people have been invested in land because you didn't pay inheritance tax. And it was entirely a tax dodge. These demonstrations have been organized by the wealthy, and they're for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. It's something mildly kind of egalitarian, I suppose, the Labour Party's doing it. Any fairly feeble way. Of course, I've ever told you Jeremy Clarkson spoke, and I've ever told you my Jeremy Clarkson story.
But
I've met him several times. He's always been the worst for wear alcohol. I was at Goodwood Festival of Speed when I was a motoring correspondent for the Daily Telegraph, and a friend of mine who knew him said, oh, have you met Jeremy Clarkson? And I said, oh, no, I don't think so. And he said, yes. He said, you called me a twat in 1992. And I said, well, there you go then.
You knew back then.
Yeah, well, I think I actually said it on Top Gear. I used to occasionally present Top Gear back in the days when it was really terrible, when it was mostly about the boot linings of Ford Orions and stuff. And I asked his mate, who was the producer, I said, can I call Jeremy Clarkson? That's right. He said, yeah, go ahead. That's the first time Alexi and Jeremy met. There's been several other occasions, but it's not.
I tried his beer by chance.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and I was annoyed that it was actually quite decent.
Yeah, well, you know.
And we shared it when I used to work at the BBC. My stint at Watchdog. We shared an office with the Top Gear, team, and it was very like a laddie corner of the office.
Yeah.
And they had this life-size cutout of the Stig.
Right, yes.
By the window. And if you, this was when BBC was in White City. And if you drive along the A40 past Broadcasting House or whatever it was called, you would see the Stig because it was like the fifth floor window and it was right on the same level as the motorway. And you could, the Stig would be looking out there. But not much interaction with them otherwise. No.
I do think there was a point, because we have to, you know, credit where credit's due. I think there was a point when that show, Top Gear, was amazingly good. I mean,
they had something special going, regardless of the
ethos of, you know, the presenters, but there was a chemistry between the presenters and the way the shooting style was extraordinary.
Quite cinematic.
It was brilliant. Yeah. I mean, they're really innovative. Direction and you know, the cinematography was amazing. There was a high point it reached where, and then of course, you know, it all went to shit.
I think that was like also hand in hand with motoring culture being feeling important and like people cared about cars more.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing seems, when I think about, you know, I wouldn't be a motoring correspondent anymore. I think because, you know, motoring is, I mean, people knew it then, but yeah, more and more motoring seems a poisoned enterprise. Now, I don't think you can do it. You know, it's much more difficult to do a show celebrating cars because of what cars always wear, but certainly become
gas guzzler used to be a positive thing. A real gas guzzler. This one's a real gas guzzler, isn't he?
It all seems pointless and rather evil.
You remember the
now,
Big Breakfast?
Yeah, I used to be on that. I used to do that sometimes.
You used to go on it?
I hosted it once or twice again, usually in times when, you know, either when it's reached a nadir for some reason or other between presenters or sometimes like over Christmas or something. I think when nobody was watching, they would look, because nobody got up early. They would let me present it, yeah.
Well, that was some good freaking television.
I mean, it was amazing to do that show. I mean,
Were you in the original house, or were you when they tried to make a new house and it failed, or were you in the third?
The original house.
Disgusting house. Oh, nice. Yeah, okay.
It was, the whole experience was absolutely extraordinary. You would be picked up by a car about 6 a.m. or something, and then you'd be driven through the darkened streets of London to this derelict part, bit of canal, and there'd just be this house on one side of the canal that was just full of light and noise and, you know, people running around, and this is still like, it's still dark, it's like 6:30 a.m. So, and then you'd go in, and they were so amazing. I mean, live TV is, I would have just been watching a movie actually about the first night of Saturday Night Live, which is not great, but I mean, there is something about live television that fills you with such energy, you know. And so you would go in there, and then they would sort of, you'd be sitting there, like, you know, chatting to somebody, and then the crew would rush in, and then you'd be live on air to the nation, and then they'd run out again. And then sometimes they'd run in and say, oh, we're going to do this now, we changed the running order, did you mind, you know?
On your feet, kind of.
Yeah, and I was always up for that. So I said, yeah, you know, let's do, you know, and so it was constantly changing and stuff. I mean, this is an original, I think Chris Evans.
And, who was originally the host, him
yeah.
and...
And it was the most thrilling experience to do that show. And
what was your role when you would slot in? Were you one of the main hosts, or were you?
No. Well, I was a guest, and then I think it was the pre-recorded. I can't remember. I think there was. I wasn't very good at it. I think they did some pre-record ones just to show over Christmas or something. And I think I hosted a couple of them. And I remember doing like On the Bed with Paul, and then On the Bed with Lily Savage as well. I remember doing that.
That's great.
And then, you know, you sort of, your car would again be done by 9 or something. And then
take part in the kind of quote unquote anarchic style of it, or like, you know, sticking your chewing gum on the camera lens and
I can't remember. I mean,
falling off the bed and shit like that, or were you?
Probably. I can't remember. Not overly so. It was absolutely thrilling to do it.
You don't get, yeah, well, oh my God, I'm starting to get old, but you don't get stuff like that anymore where it's just like visceral and you really feel like anything could happen. Like the closest you got now is like fucking Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway or some shit.
I can't
watch
that shit, so, yeah.
It's just so clean and safe, and yeah. Whereas this, and on top of everything, it was first thing in the morning, and they're just screaming in your face and throwing the shit down your throat, and you're like, "What the fuck? I'm ready for the day." Anything,
yeah.
It was just so. It was like,
but there was a lot of that sort of live stuff, wasn't there? I mean, there was the tube as well. You get the train, or you'd fly again. That was extraordinary. It was. Half 5-6 o'clock live in Newcastle. You get the train up, or you'd fly up, and you go into this sort of derelict part of Newcastle and just do this show again with just the greatest musicians. The music doesn't move me overly much, but I mean, you would find the greatest musicians in the world playing live, and again,
in a sense, it stems from that show you did with bloody Tarrant and Lenny Henry,
Tiz was, yeah. And then, well, I was, funny enough, I was thinking about watching this film about Saturday Night Live, and it's sort of not, it doesn't quite capture what it's like to do a live comedy, late night comedy show, but I have done that. I have had that experience, which was this show, OTT, which I did in January 1982, with Tarrant and Lenny and Bob Calges and various people. And so, and I thought it would be interesting to sort of make a play or a TV or something about that first night of OTT, really, because it was very interesting.
That's that would be cool. Can I play you?
Eh?
Can I play you?
I
can't do the accent.
Yeah, it's not my decision, I'm afraid, Talal, as well. I'll have to. I mean, they say they love you, but I it's not. It's out of my hands. You're too old, I think, anyway, even now. I'm sorry.
We've
decided to go another way.
For fuck's sake. Already.
I fought for you. I fought like hell for you, Talal, in that room to play me.
Oh, but yeah,
They gave it to Ahmed Jalili's son.
The younger, fresher talent.
Yeah. 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 I fought like hell for you, though. But they decided to go another way.
Your family.
talking
do you have any, kind of reservations about working with friends, and is that something you tend to like? Well, that's how you got into the biz, was working with your mates.
Yeah,
but as you got older, I suppose, is that something that people tend to avoid in case it murks a relationship? Or
I mean it always inevitably certainly complicates a relationship. Interestingly enough, I've also, I should say, this Saturday on Channel 4 is Legends of Comedy, Lenny Henry's Legends of Comedy, and this week it's me and Lenny. I am Lenny's legend of comedy. There was a very hurtful preview in the Daily Mail the other week. It said, Lenny Henry's Legends of Comedy. I think it's going a bit far to describe Lenny's guests, Roma Sranganathan, Sally Phillips, or Alexei Sale as legends, but tonight's guest, Paul Whitehouse, deserves it. I mean, fucking Paul Whitehouse. I mean, nice enough guy, but not a legend like me.
He's not like you, but he is. But that's really fucking rude of the Daily Mail.
Oh, fucking, who'd have thought that in the Daily Mail that they would say something unpleasant?
Lumping you in with Romesh and that's on Saturday, is it? That's exciting.
On Saturday, so yeah, tune in. I think I'm we shot it about a year and a half ago, and I think I'm probably being a bit of a prick, and which I forget sometimes, especially if Linda's not with me. So don't be so. I'm also, I think, wearing like a black T-shirt and with this sort of very wrinkled white linen shirt over the top of it, which is a terrible design, styling choice. Anyway, Lenny Henry's Legends of Comedy, I am that legend. And Lenny's always, Lenny always acknowledges my role as my genius, so that at least that will be good. But to ask you, no, it's interesting you asked that question about, I think to get started by working with friends, you need a group, really. I mean, that was what I was always, before alternative comedy began, I was always aware that I couldn't do it by myself. You always need, well, I think I was a gestalt, really, which is like a thing which where you know, people a become troop. Greater, the movement becomes greater than the sum of its parts.
Uh-huh, yes.
So it was only when I met Tony Allen and Keith Allen and then Pete and Nigel and Rick and Aid that I felt like I was getting somewhere. And it's, again, it's thrilling to work with friends. You form this little gang, really. You know, you it, again, those early days of the comic strip and Comedy Store and the, doing the Young Ones and the comic strip movies are some of my happiest memories by a long way. But I think that then also it is, in a, fame and success are, you know, tend to, you know, people go in different directions, really, and it does drive a wedge between. It was interesting, though, that, I mean, it was, I don't think I'm being indiscreet, Robbie Coltrane's memorial service was last Tuesday, I think, at the Actors Church in Covent Garden. And everybody, Dawn and Jennifer, Pete and Nigel, me, and then a lot of the Ben, and then like people like Red Richardson, Peter's son, Robbie's kids, Spencer and Alice, and his wife Rowan, and we were all there. And there was a tremendous, despite the differences that we have between us, there was a tremendous warmth that was felt between all of us, really. And so there's still, we're not one of those groups. I mean, there's a series of interesting documentaries on BBC Two, I think, about boy bands over last weekend, and I think maybe this weekend, I'm not sure. You know, and that, again, it's about people coalescing, and there's a lot more, I mean, there's a lot more anger between some of them, I think.
I think age is a big part of it too. There's nothing that compares to the energy, ambition, and delusion of being in your 20s. And like, if you find a squad of like-minded mates, you really believe you can do anything and get away with it. And a lot of people do, and for a good reason. And it's, if you have that in your 20s, you got to fucking use it, man. Because like, I'm like in my late 30s now, and I just think about an idea. And I go, oh, too much effort. Can't be arsed. And it's like a great idea. I really should do that, really.
Yeah.
Nah. your being in your 20s is such a gift. And
if you can find the right thing. And, you know, it's... there is a tremendous affection, I think, and love in some cases between everybody, certainly within the core of the Young Ones comic strip. Group, or Lisa was there as well, group, you know. I mean, and that's not bad. I mean, to come through with that level of affection, I think, is pretty good going, really.
I'm happy to hear that. Well, you guys made your lives together, didn't you?
And we did.
No matter what arguments you have or anything, that can never be taken away. And the death of a mate is not the time to... to bring up bad business.
No.
It sounds like a very special event.
It was. It was amazing, really. And the quality, I mean, just, you know, the quality of the performances. I mean, then everybody chose, you know, as you're doing these things, to gloss over the dark parts of Robbie and to just celebrate the, I mean, I was not particularly close to him. I mean, I was closer to his kids and to his wife, to Rona, really. You know, everybody celebrated the upside of Robbie, as it were. Hello, Wilf. You never knew him. You knew Spencer and Alice, but you didn't know. Spencer was very upset. Oh, never mind. Yes, Wilf, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Wilf.
Tell Wilf the listeners say hello. Hi, Wilf.
Yes, the listeners always say hello. Hello, Wilf. Now shut up.
Hey, Lexi, guess where I'm going today?
Where are you going today, Talal?
I'm going to the Isle of Wight.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a gig doing some stand-up down in the Isle of Wight. And I thought it might... I wondered if you had any stories or thoughts or opinions on the island.
No.
Oh. Have you been?
Yeah, I did a book I went for a book reading.
Talking to the mic.
Go Sorry, on. I think, yeah. I did a book reading there once. I think that's the only time I've been there. It's rather romantic, because on Strangers on a Train, we did one train journey that ended in Portsmouth, I think, at the ferry terminal. It does feel very romantic to, you know, the train pulls into the ferry terminal and then you get the ferry or the hovercraft to the Isle of Wight. And that's very, that's rather exciting. But I don't know much about it, really.
Oh. Well, it's got its own little microclimate. I know that much. Like,
yeah,
the weather there tends to be like similar to Cornwall.
And they have old superannuated tube trains, don't they? They have like a railway network. Yeah,
they have these ancient London Underground trains as their main kind of overground train network. That's
what you should pitch, like a kind of who was the detective? It was sat on Jersey or Guernsey or whatever it was.
Ooh,
Bergerac.
Yeah.
You're just like a Syrian member of the Isle of Wight police force for some reason, or the Hampshire police force, and you solve murders on the Isle of Wight.
That's a fun idea.
Yeah. Pitch it, man.
All right, I'll pitch it. No one out there steal that. That's a great idea. Yeah, why not? Island mystery.
Yeah, it's like, it'd be like Death in Paradise, but death.
The white side of the law.
Yeah. No. Yeah, often. Of course, you could have a lot.
You call it Isle of Beige.
It's Britain. Well, let's not be too rude. I mean, it's got Britain's only operating hovercraft link, hasn't it?
I'm not sure about that.
It has.
Well, it's a beautiful place. Shout out to any listeners in Isle of Wight. I've been there a surprising amount of times.
Really? Are they crazy for comedy there? They're crazy for your comedy stylings.
They're very hungry for comedy. This night I'm playing tonight. My friend runs it. He used to be in my comedy band. Well, right. We were a comedy band, me and him, a two-header, called Panicky Tack. We used to improvise. We've done Fringe. That was who I went up and did the Edinburgh Fringe with a couple of times. We're like improvised comedy band. We would banter with the audience and then sing songs about them and stuff. And he runs a comedy night down in Isle of Wight. It's very popular. And they have this thing called the Ventnor Fringe Festival, a very nice summer getaway. It's a fringe festival. It's not big. It's not like overwhelmingly big. It basically runs down one street and then another street a couple blocks away. Theater and comedy and music. And my band Panicky Tack would play there. We did that like three times, and that's where I met my partner. She was in the audience.
Dogs.
And so it's got a special place in my heart. It's a lovely place, but this will be my first time driving there, which I'm not.
You're going to take the car. Can you take the car over there, or do you leave the car in Portsmouth?
We leave it in Portsmouth, but I've got to pick up the headliner on the way down. I'm getting paid for the travel as well. I'm picking up the headliner on the way down and getting them there.
Hang on a second. I'm just going to chase Wilf off.
Chase Wilf out.
Too much noise.
But I wonder if any of our listeners are in the Isle of Wight. And if so, have you got anything interesting to share with us about the island? Have you ever met Derek Sandy? Welcome to the Isle of Wight. We can have a real good time. Welcome to the Isle of Wight. We can share this paradise. Welcome to the Isle of Wight. Welcome, welcome, come. There's this reggae artist called Derek Sandy in the Isle of Wight. And I think he's like one of 10 black people down there.
Right.
And he has his song is the theme song of Isle of Wight. It's a really cool song. Great reggae song. Maybe I'll play a clip of it at the end of the show.
Why not?
Right. I really thought you would have a story about the island there.
No.
No? What about John Prescott? He's passed away.
Again, no, not really. He seems like Well, it was from another age, really. Mm. No, never met the bloke.
He was quoted saying, when I do die, after 50 years in politics, all they will show on the news is 60 seconds of me thumping a fellow in Wales.
yeah,
I think will be true.
Yeah, they've had all the fucking old New Labour demons dragged out. I saw Mandelson, I saw Blair briefly being interviewed. Exhumed corpses of.
Well, I was quite
socialism.
Young when Prescott was in his heyday, but I had the sense that he was one of the real ones because he was like a working class
relatively, dude. Yeah. Scouser, of course. Also, he'd been a steward on liners and stuff. He had a job rather than what all of them are today, which is either lawyer or special advisor or, you know, none of them have ever had a proper job. So at least he had that, and I think he'd been very active in trade union. I guess maybe he ameliorated some of the more kind of fanatical, views and projects of somebody like Blair or Mandelson. It didn't stop us going into an illegal war in Iraq, it's killed millions of people, but still, you can do what you can do, I suppose.
Yeah. It's just gonna happen again, isn't it, with Palestine?
It's already happening, isn't it?
Really? No, but like, it will reach those numbers.
Those numbers, I suspect so. Yeah. I
think
so.
They got away with it once. Why not again?
Yeah. I mean, they are attempting ethnic cleansing and genocide, really, and that they may be allowed to get away with it.
For a second, it looked like it was getting better, but I'm just looking at the news in the last couple of days. When was that?
It was a brief downturn in the
maybe
in
like
the,
a month
in the
ago,
murder, wasn't it?
2 months ago. Brief downturn. The kind of public discourse will seem to be changing.
Oh right,
energy and resistance.
I mean, what the public believes is irrelevant, isn't it? Really, it seems to be, certainly on this matter. I do believe that. I was just talking with a friend of mine who was a centrist columnist, was a big columnist in his day, really, before the newspaper industry kind of collapsed. But he always does like centrist talking points, really. And usually I don't always contradict him, but I just thought, you know, he said, first of all, of course, you know, incumbent governments have collapsed everywhere. And I said, no, not everywhere. I think I said, you know, one place where it hasn't collapsed is Mexico, where the popularity of the government has increased until it's like approval rating of President Sheinbaum is like 80% because they enacted egalitarian policies. What has collapsed is not incumbents, but incumbents who offer diluted neoliberal economic programs. You know, either one kind of Thatcherism or another kind of Thatcherism. And in that case, you know, the working class is disgusted with both of them, and therefore, I mean, the danger is that, you know, clear and present danger that they will turn towards, rather than turn towards left-wing groups, they will turn towards towards reactionary forces who offer them an apparent solution, which is, you know, to blame immigrants and to say that making the tiny proportion of the population who are rich, trying to make them even richer, will in some way make the lives of ordinary people better. I mean, it's nonsense, but people kind of fall for those kind of what appear to be easy solutions.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. That's what's happening all over Europe. And that's what's happening. And I said, well, it didn't happen in France. I mean, the left won the elections in France, again, with clear egalitarian propositions. And he said, oh, France has got a much more greater history of radical politics and all. So it's not about fucking history of radical politics. It's just about the offer. I mean, fucking Kamala Harris. Why was she laughing all the time? What did she have to fucking laugh about? Like a friend of mine who I was Zooming with, and said, it's just an empty bloody pantsuit and high heels, you know, just with no, just offering joy to the very, very clear proposition that Trump offers, which is, you know, authoritarianism. And, you know, just fucking paying Oprah Winfrey $1 million or Beyonce $5 million to turn out for you, that's not going to contradict you being offered what appears to be a very clear solution to your problems. And, so, you know, that's what's going to happen here as well. You know, I mean, it's the same.
You're right.
He said he'd been talking to his financial advisor, and his financial advisor was saying that Rachel Reeves is a genius and all the things that she's done are going to really pay off. So I wait to see whether that's true or not. Seems unlikely, but there you are.
Well, yeah, people with money have different priorities, don't they? I'm and with Kamala, I guess it's just so much spent energy and money spent on image rather than...
Yeah, because they've got nothing to say. You know, they've got no clear. All they've got is watered down what Donald Trump's offering.
Yeah.
Really. So, you know, and I think, surveys say only 4% of the, you know, the electorate care about foreign policy issues. But I think her support for genocide cost her. I believe that. I mean, I think even if people don't specifically think they're voting because you've been allowing, you know, and facilitating a genocide, I think people still, it creates a vibe around you. And people stayed at home, you know, she lost 15 million votes compared to Biden. Still a lot of people turned out, but, and even Trump lost votes compared to 2020 and 2016.
Really?
Yeah. You look it up. But, I mean, he didn't lose many, but, you know, like 500,000 or something.
Yeah, there must have been more apathy than usual because of
genocide. Yeah, people are disillusioned with the process, as they were here. You know, people didn't vote for the Labour Party. They not voted for the Tory Party.
Yep. And tactical voting, I think, is it's still very popular, but I think it is on the wane.
I don't know. But speaking of a viable left alternative, we have got coming in to Casa de Wilf next Friday, I think, Andrew Feinstein, who stood against Keir Starmer in...
A couple Fridays.
He's coming here next week, but we won't broadcast it then, I think. He's coming here on the 13th. Oh, I don't know. Anyway,
of December...
Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a few weeks. It's not next week, but it's in a few weeks. Yeah, we've got
five. I'm so keen to get to Christmas that I'm conflating.
You're jumping ahead in
time.
I
love Christmas so much. I don't know when. Yeah, you're right. Friday, December, he's coming in. But I think he's a really interesting character, Andrew. He stood against Starmer here in Holborn and St. Patrick's. Yeah. Halved Starmer's majority, which has never been heard of before. A prime minister has never been elected without increasing their majority.
Wow.
I think that's really significant. And he's got interest. He's got a lot of interesting ideas about how you found a viable left, not necessarily a party as such, but a left movement, which I think in a way parties can be, you know, very, you know, there's people have tried to start all these, you know, socialist alternative, you know, Unity Left Alliance, and it's never worked really. I think they'd offer like 30 page manifestos on you know what their policy would be towards foreign policy would be towards relieving third world debt or whatever, you know. And as that guy we had on a while ago said, you're not going to get in. Why bother having a policy on, debt relief?
Yeah.
Yeah, just campaign on local issues and get... And I think that he... Andrew's got some very interesting ideas on that. Anyway. So I think what he's thinking about is a kind of is a party which is, or a movement which is an alliance of left groups, you know, which has both an electoral, but also a community kind of basis. So it works. It's a two pronged strategy, really, both working within the community on community issues, but also standing people for parliament, I think, and council seats. I think that's interesting. Anyway, we will have him on, and we'll release that to the world.
Speaking of mobilising the left and activism, can I do a quick plug?
Of course.
Can I plug something quickly? My friend is part of a wonderful theatre group called the White Kite Collective.
I know them well. I've worked with them on several occasions.
You know them well. And I don't think this is exclusively their production, but they are definitely involved. This is a play or a group, a series of short plays called Cutting the Tightrope, The Divorce of Politics from Art. It's on at the Arcola Theatre in London.
A nice spot, yeah.
If you go to arcolatheatre.com, and look at their what's on schedule. You can see Cutting the Tightrope, The Divorce of Politics from Art. A really amazing group of writers and performers in this show. And they are also running a bunch of workshops. So you can go during the day and check out these workshops, including how to organize for Palestine, how to talk about Palestine. And you can go and see the play itself. I really do recommend it. I'm going to go. I've booked tickets to go at one time. I should tell you the dates. It's running from the 26th of November to the 7th of December. And my good friend Joel is in that play, and he's helped write it as well. And my other friend Sami Abuwerde, Palestinian comedian, is a writer of one of the short plays in that. And of course, I believe you'll be helping out the cause by buying a ticket and going to this show at the Arcola Theatre. I guess while I'm here, I'll tell you also on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, 26th of November, I'm emceeing at a comedy gig called Stand Up for Palestine, Lebanon and Sudan, raising money for UNICEF. It's run by Arabs Are Not Funny, which is a comedy night I do a lot of. So all the comics are of Arab descent, and there's some TV stars on there as well, like Esther Manito and Fatiha El Ghurri, and me. And some great, fucking hell, there's like 15 of us all performing. We're going to bombard you with 5-minute sets. I'm emceeing.
Yeah, get everybody on and off quick. Be my,
Yeah. And it's on at the Blues Kitchen in Brixton. Buy your tickets for that at artscanteen.com. I'll put links for both of those events in the description, if you don't mind, Alexi, to use our space to promote those shows.
No, I'm past caring.
Come along. And if you see me, if you come to the Stand Up for Palestine, Lebanon, Sudan show on Tuesday 26th, come up to me and like whisper in my ear that you're a fan of the Alexi podcast and then disappear by the time I've turned around. That would be great. That would be great.
I like your podcast.
Support the podcast. Go to patreon.com/AlexiElPodcast, please. We are growing, you know. We've got like 256 members on our Patreon, paying members.
Yeah, that's good.
What can we do if we get up to 500 members?
Yeah.
This is called what they call a... they call it... There's a name for this. I'll think of it, but like... it's called a something goal. Right. What, is there something special we could do, like an episode?
We should do if we get up to 500 Patreon members. Yeah, we should.
What about we live stream an episode of the show?
Yeah.
And we take live questions from whoever's watching.
Yeah, okay, that's like Twitch, isn't it?
Yeah, but we'll do it on YouTube.
Yeah.
If people want to ask questions while we're streaming, we can take questions. We can even have some guests come in and out of the stream, including some audience members. And What do you think? Have a chaotic... We're talking about live TV today.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
What do you think of something like that? If we get to 500 patrons, it might take a couple months, give us some time to prepare.
Yeah.
We'll do a live-streamed Alexis L podcast where anything can happen.
I mean, like that guy, yeah, definitely. That guy, Hassan Piker, who's the biggest live streamer in the world or whatever, in Left Wing, he just sits on Twitch for like 4 hours a day, doesn't he? Just saying Left Wing shit, as I understand it.
Hassan Piker. Oh, yeah. And he's the reason why they've banned the word Zionist on Twitch now.
Really?
They've just done that, like yesterday.
Motherfuckers. Well, because it's like the Worldwide Zionist Federation. It's not like, you know, it's a word that they use, the supporters of Israel.
I'm looking at Fox News' headlines. Left-wing Twitch star's video filled with terrorist propaganda. Twitch star called for new 9/11, dismissed horror of October 7th. Surely not.
No, well, Fox News isn't to be relied on.
2.8 million people in his audience. Fucking hell. When are we going to get to those numbers?
Yeah, well, maybe we should, you know, as well as this. Well, I can't really. I don't think I could face. I suppose if I could get, how many viewers has he got, listeners or whatever has he got?
2.8 million.
And how long does he sit on Twitch for every day?
Oh, God knows. I don't know.
Well, if 2.8 million people say they're going, you know, guarantee that they will listen to me, I will sit on Twitch for two or 3 hours. We'll sit on Twitch for 2 or 3 hours a day, but it's unlikely, isn't it?
Fucking hell, they really twist anything. He broadcast propaganda from Yemen's Houthis, framed violent terrorist acts as resistance, express sympathy for extremist groups who, this is Fox News, yeah, who target civilians and downplayed October 7th, blah, blah.
Yeah.
His shocking diatribes are among the most popular on the video game streaming platform, which allows viewers to listen to their favorite personalities opine on blah, 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 blah.
Assuming you can use some other word rather than Zionist. I mean,
he says it doesn't matter what happened on October 7th. It doesn't change the dynamic of Palestinians and Israelis for me. Well, yeah.
Fair enough.
You can't deny that it was resistance.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with the resistance or not is up to you.
It was certainly brutal. But, yeah, well, I go along with Norman Finkelstein's definition that it was a slave uprising, you know, and in a slave uprising, terrible acts of brutality occur, but nevertheless, the ones who you ultimately blame for that uprising are not the slaves, but are their oppressors.
Yes. That's like when they say, Israel doesn't have a right to defend itself when it's against people who they occupy, who they oppress.
And that's in the, it's in the United Nations charter, dude, you know. People, you know, indigenous peoples are allowed to resist their occupier. And like yet, written in the UN
get fucking
charter.
Called an anti-Semite for even considering that as a opinion.
Yep.
It's disgusting. What do you think of the band Kneecap?
Kneecap, well, I know my agent, Michelle, was involved in that movie, Kneecap, which actually, funny enough, we watched a couple of nights ago. I like that. Yeah, I like the. I mean, I was friendly with I don't know what they see the lineage. I was friendly with the Rubber Bandits, really, which I was certain.
Yeah.
Similar kind of Irish, I mean, it's an Irish rap, although Rubber Bandits, I think, mostly rap in English.
Well, we had one of them on the great. Show.
Yeah, yeah. I think Kneecap are great. And the movies, the movie's very enjoyable as well. So.
And they're super firm supporters of...
Yeah.
Sir Paul McCartney, supporters of Palestine.
Palestine, no, they're great. Their music and their, I like that they rap in their native, you know, in Irish.
Yes,
I always like it. You know, it always really pleases me. I mean, when you're in Wales and you see the road signs in English and Welsh, I always think, you know, that makes me feel, pleases me. It's less, when we were doing Strangers on a Train, if we ever went into Wales to see it, say it's sorted, in Welsh, because they have to make every fucking announcement in English and then Welsh. So we didn't get much space to do interviews sometimes. I can't remember what it is now, but see it, say it, sorted in Welsh haunts me in my dreams sometimes.
Sorted. See it, say it, sorted. Os welwch unrhyw beth am heis, siaradwch ag aelod o staff neu anfonwch neges destun at heddlu trafnidiaeth Prydain. Wedi sylwi, wedi sôn, wedi setlo.
Oh, nice. Do you remember?
I remember someone,
a wonderful comment, loving the show, and said, suggested Kneecap as a Alexis L movie club, film club.
Yeah, I think we're looking for more classics than that, really. But it is a good movie. I urge you to.
It's available on one of the popular streaming platforms for free at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching it very much. But in 2 weeks' time, we're going to discuss with Neil and I.
Right.
So adding some hype to the train
here. We're just going to discuss it.
2 episodes time. We're going to discuss with Neil and I.
I could probably act it out more or less, but
not yet.
Watch it again. Yeah.
Someone in our Patreon community chat room said it's a great film, but a bit on the dubious side in 2024. I'm led to believe by younger ones.
I suppose that's one of the things we can discuss, really. I was thinking about that this morning. I don't know about that, really. It's something, you know, particularly, I suppose, the character of Uncle Monty is
perhaps. I don't know about you, but in my opinion, I think cancel culture's gone mad.
Right. I by and large think that identity politics is used to split the working class, or the split revolution, you know.
I fucking agree, mate.
It drives a wedge.
I agree.
Yeah, that all the problems of identity, the problems of oppression, are all byproducts of capitalism. And if we allow ourselves to be splintered off into various competing tribes by those who promote identity politics, I think that is over broader revolutionary politics. I think that is problematic. That is
exactly
my opinion.
Exactly. Focus on the real enemy.
Yes. They want people to go down these, you know, alleyways, these dead end alleyways of
identitarianism. No matter what section of society you're looking at, no matter what religion, what class, what sexual orientation, what sexuality, what identity, there are good people and bad people. And we should know better than to tar everyone with the same fucking brush. And
you say that.
And I'll say it over and over again. Like, why fucking oppress a group of oppressed people?
Okay, I've already been slagged off in the Daily Mail TV section this week. I'm going to let you...
Whatever. And and when we get like hateful comments in the chat, in the YouTube comments or wherever, I delete that shit because it stinks. People having a go at Alexi for saying something that was slightly incorrect or having an opinion that doesn't align with yours.
Oh, no.
If you don't want your comment to be deleted, then try just having manners and be like, well, actually, tell us your opinions. We love to hear your opinions, but don't be fucking rude. We'll kick
you
out
of
the
controversial club. I mean, I think probably the section of our audience that's interested in weaponry is less than who are interested in other things. But I will say there was a disgraceful comment on that I saw on YouTube that said that the AK-47 was really designed by Schmeiser when he designed this is going to be really.
I saw this one.
Tune out for anybody who, you know, the AK copy is just a copy. The AK is a copy of the Sturmgewehr 44, which was fielded by the Germans in the last couple of years of the war. And I don't even know if it was designed by Schmeiser, this commentator, this disgusting commentator, slagging off. Kalashnikov. There is, I don't know if there are any of our arms nut fans, you know, interested. I can see a lot of you tuning out at this point. But whether they think, I mean, clearly there are similarities between the assault rifle 44, STG 44, and the AK-47. But I think, personally, I think Kalashnikov brought a lot to the party himself. But, you know. Let's discuss this.
And if you want to watch a 20-minute film of Alexei, myself, and my brother at a shooting range shooting guns, yeah, go join our Patreon, patreon.com/AlexeySailPodcast. It's on there.
It's really pony, I think, as we always say. Yeah, but, you know.
Is that good or bad?
Bad, really.
What's pony? The video?
No, it's just a bit. I just...
You think it's cringy?
No, it's not cringy, really. I was just a bit... We had to behave ourselves so much, didn't we, because we were at Disney.
Oh, yeah,
really.
But so it what? It's like, a fun video. It's
Yeah, is it?
Oh, we got right. some nice shots in, man. My all brother right. put his music on it. Thank you, my brother, Maddie, for the music you make for this podcast as well.
Yes.
And he edited that video. And he has his own podcast called Arms House to Your Mum's House.
And what was that about?
It's about graffiti mainly.
Oh, right.
They were on BBC News recently.
Oh, I know. I saw.
Slagging off Banksy when he did that London Zoo thing.
Controversial, again.
Because they're real graff guys. They're real graffiti guys. What's your opinion on graffiti, Alexei? You got any?
I don't want to.
You don't want to?
I don't want to.
They really want to have you on their show as a guest.
I'm not entirely sympathetic to their point of view. Is that a terrible thing to say?
No.
Does that make me seem like an old man?
You're allowed your opinions. No, not at all. What's your reasoning?
You know, I have both a tremendous craving for popularity allied with, you know, I can't do this some other time.
Yeah, sure, man.
I'm not. I think I've said enough inflammatory things.
Take note, Ahmed. All right, I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Frank Zappa?
Don't really know a lot about the guy. I remember when we were doing foundation at Southport College of Art a million years ago, we had a record player in the studio and we used to play. And one of the records we used to play was that instrumental one. Is it Weasel's Rip My Flesh? Instrumental, the song, no which idea. I thought was really, really amazing. Mm. I think he's a really interesting guy. I don't know an awful lot about him. I know he said it's a good quote, that the media or the news media maybe are just the entertainment division of the military-industrial complex, which I think is, nobody said a truer word.
Some great quotes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He was a bad parent. Apparently, according
to his kids.
It wasn't about
calling your kid Moon Unit for a start. It's not a good start. But he's interesting, musician. And also Captain Beefheart as well, who's a sort of acolyte, wasn't he? That's the thing. Very interesting musician.
Lebanese American, I believe.
Zappa.
Yeah, and he always had concept albums. Like his songs would run in. My friend was, I'm not overly familiar either, but I was on a long drive with my mate and he played me two of his albums and the songs go into each other and like they're telling a story as you go through the album.
Yeah.
Really conceptual, high-end kind of jazz rock stuff. And yeah, I was impressed. Yeah, I was really impressed by it.
Yeah, yeah. Died too young. I think died quite early, didn't he? Mm. Something or other.
Happy to what?
I don't know. Happy for people to ring in and say what they not ring in. God, people to in whatever form they can communicate their liking or dislike of Frank Zappa. Happy to hear from them. Happy if people telegraph or send a telegram via the autogyro to the Prussian embassy it's a bit from in the Simpsons. Mr. Burns is in the he wants a package he wants sent into the he says I want this sent to the Prussian embassy in what did Thailand used to be called I want this anyway. I want this to catch the last auto gyro to the Prussian embassy in whatever Thailand used to be called.
What the fuck? Was it like, auto gyro?
Auto gyro. Well, an auto gyro is where it's like a sort of aircraft.
Siam.
Where the Siam. That's right. I want this to get the last auto gyro to the Prussian embassy in Siam. Yes. An auto gyro is where the function of the wing is replaced by an unpowered spinning rotor. So the engine motor power comes from a propeller at the back of the, you know, in like the, some of these Bond films, there's an auto gyro in a couple of them, which is, it was one of those great British inventions that like the hovercraft that never really caught on. So the lift is provided by this rotor, which is just on a sort of gimbal and spins freely. That provides lift, but the motor, the forward direction is provided by a propeller at the, which a pusher propeller at the back. So you go along, the rotor begins to spin, and that sort of lifts. And they're quite sort of maneuverable. And I mean, I think they've got some. I don't know whether they're more dangerous, less dangerous than helicopters, but that's certainly quite an uncomplicated, quite an uncomplicated machine, really.
And the old school ones had the propeller on the front.
Okay.
And it looks like a wingless plane with a helicopter rotor on the top.
Yeah, so the function of the wings is provided by this kind of rotor, free spinning rotor.
Oh, that's wild.
Is above the things I know.
Fun looking vehicle.
Yeah, never caught on really. I don't know why.
There's one with those like the things on the bottom so it can land on water as well. I like this.
Yeah. What's happening with the airline? You see from time to time your news stories about, you know, the airships making a comeback. And there's this thing called the Airlander, isn't it? Which again is one of those British projects which seems to come and go from the news. It looks like two sort of hot dog buns stuck together. I'd like the airship to make a comeback. You know, obviously it's safer than the Zeppelin or the R101, but I'd like the airship to...
Looks like a Pixar cartoon, this Airlander 10.
The Airlander. How are they doing? We were going to be traveling from Liverpool to Northampton by airship by 2024, but it doesn't seem to be...
Well, look at this. Wow. Okay, it's produced by Hybrid Air Vehicles. It can stay airborne for 5 days. It can carry 10 tons of stuff. It can go up to 20,000 feet up in the air. It looks like a big bum.
Yes, it does a bit, yeah.
It's oh yeah, here, 75% reduction in CO2.
Mm-hmm.
Base configuration. Oh, there's a hybrid electric one that is 90% reduction in CO2, and there's an all-electric one as well. So it can be a zero-emissions aircraft, hoping to be in service by 2030. You just know that big aeroplane isn't going to let this happen. They're gonna fucking,
well, that's true, yes. Let's fight big airplanes. True, you're right there. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if you could travel, you know.
Oh, travel across the world, guilt-free.
Yeah, Liverpool
too. Modular design. Okay, it's pretty like the cabin where you sit. Looks like one of those army cargo plane things, because like the back bit opens up with a ramp.
All right.
And then they load on these big boxes. And I can see in this picture, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 seats for passengers.
Cargo.
And a big bit of cargo at the back. So, yeah, not, you'd have to have a lot of them to accommodate everyone, or it will just be really expensive.
I'd like to think that we're traveling from Madrid to Aberdeen by Airlander,
so cool.
Hybrid vehicle by 2030. I would like to be invited on the first flight.
Oh, yeah.
First flight too. After they've had a lot of safety flights.
The big bum is filled with helium.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's really interesting. I'm not going to keep reading because there's a lot here. Fuck me. Thanks for introducing that to me. That looks really cool.
Well, let's have an alternative aircraft.
Absolutely.
Oh, I could talk for hours on aircraft.
Yeah, well, that's teasing us for next episode. Let's talk about planes next episode. I love that.
All right.
I'm calling time on this session.
All right.
Bang the gavel. This session's now over.
You'll
find the minutes in your email inbox. Next session's agenda is well included in that email. But the headline will be planes.
Thank you. Now I'll keep adding those listeners, everybody. Tell your friends. Tune in multiple times or however you do this, really.
Yes, support the Patreon. Links in the description of the podcast. In the YouTube description, there's links for the Patreon, for the play that I mentioned in the Arcola Theatre, for the Palestine gig I'm playing on Tuesday.
I think I'm doing a Stop the War benefit on the 24th as well.
You still haven't done that. So that'll be Thursday next week. I'll put a link for that in the description too, the Stop the War benefit.
Always a laugh a minute.
Starring Alexei Sale. Stop war with comedy.
Yeah, please. Well, that was, I think that's going to increase. I'm grown greedy now for, week on week growth.
Yes,
exponential
please.
Growth. Don't let me down, people. Bye bye.
So green, it's truly the best.